There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
CJ gets the snap. CJ fires over the middle, and he's got his man across the 10-5, cutting inside. Dell breaks a tackle. Touchdown, Houston. Tank Dell with the TD catch and run off the arm of C.J. Stroud.
Pena drills one. High and deep to left field. The kid from Rhode Island just puts one out of the stadium at Fenway. And the Astros have double figures. It's 10-0.
Hanging slider. And JP3 goes yard.
Yeah, man. It was a hell of a weekend here in Houston. That was nice. Here in Houston and in Boston on behalf of Houston. Yeah, it was a great weekend.
There was a lot of hospitality by an otherwise grumpy area of the country.
It's very nice of them. They accommodated the Astros very well, allowing them to score 23 runs over three games. That was really good, man. Good weekend. Hope you all had a great weekend. It's great to be with you here on a Monday, a reaction Monday, we'll call it today, because we do have a lot to react to. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne. How are you, my friend? How was your week? Was your weekend as good as the Astros and the Texans?
It was
weekend?
Good. I honestly got a little overwhelmed this weekend because there was football everywhere, and I was, you know, trying to digest the all 22 of the Texans while also taking in the first quarter or just the first couple series of a lot of these preseason games. And it was nice. It was nice to have everything back.
It was fun, man. It was fun.
Also kudos to the Yankees, who right now we're not trying to win the league or anything. The Yankees knocked off the Rangers several times.
Yeah, that was good. And, several times.
It was so the Northeast was good to the Astros this week.
Big time. Yep, they're in Florida to take on Tampa for a few games. We'll get to them. Texans and Texans Steelers on Friday. You heard that Tank Dell touchdown coming in. There's a lot to get to unpack from that game. There was a night practice last night. A lot of friendly faces back at that one. Laremy Tunsil back in uniform. Joe Mixon back. Christian Harris was back for a little while. Yeah, for a little
and
bit.
And then he walked off with the assistance of
and
a
he
trainer.
Wasn't.
Yeah. I'm trying not to panic about Christian Harris, but I'm panicking a little bit. There's a little bit of pee in my underwear right now, Sean. I pee about 3 milliliters an hour, just kind of just nervous about Christian Harris.
Okay, yeah. That was a lot of detail. So let's dig into the game. 20-12, the Texans beat the Steelers on Friday night. Here was D'Amico Ryans after the game. The big thing that got people excited is what you heard bumping in here. Great to see Tank Dell get into the end zone. Great to see C.J. Stroud throw him a touchdown pass. Here was D'Amico Ryans on what we saw from the first team.
I think both of our units went out and made plays. Offensively, we were efficient. Loved the C.J., the Tank, that connection, making a big play for us. Tank getting in the end zone. Happy to just see him back. And we lost Tank last year to the injury. And you see why we missed him. Right? He's a big play threat every time he's on the field. So I was excited to see that connection make a big play for us. And defensively, seeing Daniil step up and get after the quarterback is why we got him here, right, to get after the quarterback. And that's what he showed in this limited snaps, but he did a really great job of doing, getting after the quarterback, being disruptive up front. Like, that's what we expected. So excited to see what Daniil did as well.
Okay, so the two freaks of nature on the team, the guys who are most physically freaks of nature, and who are at opposite ends of the spectrum, Tank Dell and Daniil Hunter. You know, it's kind of like a prize poodle and a prize Great Dane. You're like, wow, they're both so impressive, but just in much different ways. It doesn't look humanly possible that they're even the same species. What the hell is this? So those are the two guys that I think really jumped out. The best part about Daniil Hunter is this. I think on that screen, which ended up, you know, being kind of a nice play for the Bears, it's a screen where the offensive line is kind of trying to let the defensive line win, but you can't let them win too
Not
well.
Not that fast.
Yeah, yeah. And because he's got such a big radius, he just, he almost really screwed up Justin Fields' day on that, because he just encompasses so many... so much volume in space that was really cool. And then Daniil Hunter's sack, likewise, that was, I mean, he just ran the hoop, you know, that poor number 74 for the Steelers. Just, it was left in that zone of like, what am I going to do here? I can't block you right on a screen.
It's crazy.
I can't block you right properly. And Daniil Hunter was just a machine out there. The other thing, Tank Dell, that was beautiful, and I think a little bit of an offshoot of what happens when you have so many receiving threats on the field is that some guys in coverage, their minds turn to mush, and they start looking at, like, oh, what's my threat underneath? Oh, but, oh gosh, there goes Tank Dell behind me.
Yeah.
Their ability to carve up zone is going to be interesting this year. It's not, I mean, there's still some issues on the offensive line. There's big issues in the run game. They have yet to really run the ball well in the first quarter. And how much of that is Damian Pierce? How much of that is the offensive line? It's a lot bit of both, I think. So, but as far as Tank Dell, the biggest Tank Dell on the punt return, you and I haven't talked about this yet. Tank Dell had a really nice punt return. Then at the end, former Houston Texans player, and I'm guessing former Australian after this, because I don't think they'll allow him back in Australia.
Right.
Like, you're representing your country by hitting Tank Dell out of bounds.
Tank Dell, great American, out of bounds.
That's your big, like, I'm a tough guy. I used to play Aussie rules football.
Yep.
I don't know, man. I feel like in Aussie rules football, they might take you out and dunk you in a river.
Frown upon that.
After something like that. Yep. Yeah. Just a dirty hit on a tiny guy out of bounds. But it did raise the question, all right, dude, how do we feel about Tank Dell returning punts?
I've got a feeling on that. Look, I was advocating for Tank Dell returning kicks in this new kickoff world that we live in, which, by the way, still sucks. This new kickoff sucks. I don't like it at all.
I felt better about it after this weekend.
Did you? I'm just not a fan.
I felt like there were better moments.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. But to answer your question, do you remember back in 2016 when the Texans would use Will Fuller as like a break glass in case of emergency punt returner? Like, at certain times, and he won a game for them early in his rookie year against the Titans with a punt return. I could see them doing that with Tank, where, like, maybe not in the first or second quarter, but if it's the third quarter, fourth quarter, they're down seven, other teams punting to them. You know, Tank's clearly got a different gear than other people at everything football-wise.
Yeah.
So I could see them using him like that, and I wouldn't mind it. That was really cool to see. I would anticipate that not as many teams are going to be as stupid as the Steelers and drill him out of bounds during a real game like they did.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, and yet it does happen, you know. That's always the thing with Tank. It's that, all right, and on goal line there when he breaks his leg, it's not going to happen every time, but when it does happen, he's...
Do you like it?
I like it, I like it. I think, honestly, you put the ball in the hands of your playmakers as much as possible.
Dude, yeah.
And there's... You know, they're going to – I'm not worried at all about, like, how do guys get their touches, but there's a lot of athletic ability out there.
Yeah.
Now, Tank Dell on his touchdown – I didn't even talk about that. Yeah. Tank Dell on his touchdown, that's the moment there where, look, the offense wasn't looking all that hot, kind of disjointed, but at any given moment, you're going to have moments like that. And CJ was able to hit Tank Dell – in stride, on time, didn't need brilliant pass protection. He just needed the play to play out the way they wanted the play to play out. That was really nice to see. And then if you add to that the fact that, you know, Cade Stover's receptions. You watch Cade run. It's not he doesn't have like a George Kittle level of athleticism, but as long as he knows where to go and as long as he's running his routes well, the Cade Stover and Dalton Schultz are going to be outlets on this when teams are worried about all that other receiving talent.
Yeah, dude, Cade, there was a practice, an evening practice last night, as we mentioned a little earlier in the open here. Cade was getting snaps with the ones, and he was piecing last night, man.
Yeah,
got behind the defense on a play for a long touchdown, had a crosser over the middle where he, like DeAndre Hopkins style, just snared it, plucked it. I mean, Cade Stover's going to get a lot more snaps than your garden variety fourth-round pick with this team.
I think I've seen progress with his blocking. He's still got some issues. I mean, and part of it is, you know, everything that Damian Pierce has talked about with how hard this offense is because it's such a big playbook. And there's so many checks before the snap at the line of scrimmage that you got to figure out. So they've got Cade back there playing fullback at times, you know, H-back, tight end, all those things. You can see the hesitancy at times, but on the plays where he knows what he's doing for sure, I think he's doing some good things.
Yeah.
It's just all that mental stuff that you got to clean up, and that'll be a year-long process.
We'll get to the Astros in the next segment because they deserve a little more than the couple minutes we have left here. What did you think of the defense on Friday?
I thought the should have been a touchdown by Kyle Allen. That was obvious mental error, miscommunication.
Like the Three Stooges. Three guys ran into each other.
Well, two guys jumped out. I was wondering, I was getting all ready to explain that on the goal line, there's no such thing as an illegal pick, that it's all, hey, rub routes are legal right on the goal line. Those wide receivers can pretty much do whatever they want. And then you go back and watch it, and you're like, oh, they didn't even have to do
it. They picked each other.
This was just two defensive backs pouncing on the outside receiver when one of them, they were either supposed to switch or stay man the whole way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if the starters had made that mistake, I'd be really, really nervous. But I can excuse that because otherwise it was a good play in terms of putting some heat on the quarterback.
Yeah. There are a lot of chunk plays, it felt like, for the Steelers. What did you think? The Steeler people were really excited about Justin Fields, and I guess the numbers look good. What did you think?
I don't know if I sent you that one article that said that Justin Fields showed that he had what it took. I thought it was exactly what Justin Fields has always been since he's gotten to the NFL, is yes, he can make the really nice plays and throws. It's not just, I think every time Justin Fields makes a nice throw, people are like, there you go. He's the guy. I'm like, no, it's a matter of how consistently you do it.
Yep.
And I can't excuse the fumbled snaps. You know, there's a guy that has struggled whenever they've asked him to operate like an NFL quarterback and play under center and do all those other things. Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator up there, it loves the play action, is going to need the quarterback under center. I think Russell Wilson won the starting job just by the bobbled snaps alone. That was it was some ugly stuff he put out there.
Wow, so you think just by not being out there, Russell Wilson that Friday was good for him, huh?
He's not gonna be the source of four turnovers in a game as often as Justin Fields.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. But I don't think anybody in Pittsburgh should get excited about either of their quarterbacks.
No.
I thought it was a good debut for Davis Mills I just kept thinking, like, man, you probably wouldn't have to. Maybe I don't know if the Texans would have relinquished Davis Mills, but he's clearly worth more in a trade right now than Justin Fields' conditional seventh or sixth round pick or whatever they gave up for him.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We're off and running. A reaction Monday. Texans win on Friday against the Steelers. We got a lot to get into from that game. Practice last night. We'll do a sort of a stock up, stock down on the Texans at 7 o'clock. Got a lot of acknowledgments at 7:20 on the show today, but let's dig into the Astros next. Good weekend, great weekend for the Astros. There's a trend with the Astros that has me feeling very confident if they do indeed make the postseason, and we will get to that coming up next.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Really good weekend in Boston. As Seth pointed out earlier, Boston was uncharacteristically hospitable to outsiders from the South on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, capped off by a 10-2 win yesterday. The one thing, we'll get into some of the individual performances, because Yordan Alvarez and Alex Bregman just, I mean, completely ruined the Red Sox over the weekend. Ooh. I think the big thing for me, Seth, like going into this week, I'm like, okay, this is a team that the Astros, who are, by the way, still in a virtual tie for first place in the American League West. So they're, in a way, they're just as much a wild card team as the Seattle Mariners are right now. If you look at the standings, they just don't show up there because they're leading the division literally by a percentage point. That, like, that's it. So I'm, you know, like the worst case scenario is you still got to treat them like a wild card team. And coming into the weekend, the Red Sox were a game and a half out of the last wild card spot. The Astros were four games out. Well, they've flipped that now. They swept them, so they're a half game up on the Red Sox now. So that was good news. And as I just got thinking about the Astros over the last few weeks, really maybe even going back to the Baltimore series in June, in late June, which is that's where the season really flipped for them, and they started to kind of – that led them into the month of July, which has been, which was easily their best month of the year so far. The thing that gives me confidence with this Astros team, an Astros team that's been wildly inconsistent this year, is that they've actually still played pretty well of late, you know, over the last month and a half or so against good teams.
Right.
Like, which is, you know, that's how they've been in previous years, but this year they've been losing to mediocre and bad teams much more than in years past. But they, you know, they still, when Baltimore was in town, and it's a huge series for the Astros, and they're teetering on the brink of being knocked out of the race, what do? They sweep them. You know, the Dodgers come to town. They take two out of three, including a huge comeback win on Saturday that weekend. Man, they need to win some games against the Mariners. They take two out of three. They need to win these games against Boston because it's starting to be nut-cutting time here. It's going to be September before we know it. They go up there, and they don't just sweep them. They annihilate the Red Sox, you know, over the weekend. So that's the thing for me with the Astros. Like, that's what was great to see. Like, okay, there's September and October, Bregman. You know what I mean? Like, there's, I mean, Yordan's, he's great in every month, but he's especially great in Fenway Park.
He's especially great when he plays left field every day, as it's been of late. And that's one of the huge questions. This will be one of the fascinating developments over the remainder of the season. Is there's going to be times where, man, Yordan's out there in left field every day, because no matter how bad he is as a left fielder, and I know, yeah, he's better than people expected, but he's still not a good left fielder. The way he's been hitting the ball, especially this last five games, it's just, that's the trade-off you want. But there's going to be times where Espada is going to have to swap out Chaz McCormick for Yordan Alvarez because you need somebody in left field late in the game. Yeah. It's going to be dicey. So I feel much, much better over the last five games, and yet they're still in a very precarious situation. They haven't lost since DiCenzo came up.
He's the key.
Yeah, that's the key. But I think the biggest thing is Bregman, Altuve, and Yordan are 25 for 60 in that stretch. Bregman's got five extra base hits. Yordan's got five home runs. Like, they're getting everything you want out of those guys right now, which is, that's like the easiest thing in baseball. If you want to be a great team, your great players got to play great, at least most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously you need your role players to step up here and there, but if Bregman can keep this up, This is good. It's got that good feeling all
over
again. Yeah,
it's huge because Jordan's going to hit. I mean, like Jordan has an argument to be as the best hitter on the planet. Like, he's at his best. He's that good. Like, dude, the numbers for these two this weekend, like in the three games, Jordan's OPS in those three games was almost 2,300. Bregman's was almost 2,000. And Jordan in Fenway Park, if he played for the Red Sox, holy smokes, you know, the numbers he would put up with the pesky pole down the right field line and with the green monster staring him right in the face when he decides to go oppo. Like, holy cow.
Rafael Devers, after one of the games, I guess, had said that, you know, his interpreter, after Devers gave his quote, Callis told the story yesterday, was he said, the interpreter said that Jordan's one of the best players in baseball. And I guess it sounds like Devers was like, knows his English well enough to be like, no. I said the best hitter in baseball. Yeah.
Hey, man, I'm not giving obvious takes over here. I'm giving hot takes, interpreter.
Now Devers has to go and check and see if his interpreter is into gambling. like, how much can I trust you right. SOB?
Right.
Why are all these baseball interpreters going rogue all the time? My God.
Yeah, that guy ruined it. Otani's guy ruined it for all the interpreters.
Devers on Saturday was, when Devers struck out on Saturday, he's fun to watch, man. He stood at the plate and angrily started taking his gloves off. He's just disgusted with himself.
That's good. Arrighetti is a big story this weekend. Ocho texting. Good morning, guys. Did I miss the Spencer Arrighetti is the new Garrett Cole segment? No, you're here for it now, Ocho.
Right.
Spencer Arrighetti's been amazing the last really since the All-Star break. I won't say amazing since the All-Star break. These last two starts have been incredible. The first rookie in American League history with 12 plus strikeouts and back-to-back starts.
He's one of these guys, I think, where you and I have differed a little bit on a couple things. I think I've been more skeptical of the Astros pitching analytics and coaching staff to be as good as they once were at just absolutely capturing the most out of these guys. And yet, you know, Arrighetti has been a great look at what they've been able to do. Hunter Brown, even though the big change came with Alex Bregman's advice. Yeah. You got to credit the entire organization, I think, for bringing Hunter Brown the way they have. But whereas you've been more, I realize what it was. I think I've been more bullish on Arrighetti than you in general.
Mm-hmm.
And you've also been a known JP France hater. I think it's a you're an anti-European, which I can appreciate. So JP France by his name being France
his
and Arrighetti by having
France.
An obviously. Frankly, I'm surprised.
I'm a
that,
xenophobe. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I'm surprised that you're into Caratini as much as you are. He's from Puerto Rico, but I think he's got an Italian grandfather.
Like
or
all
something.
These guys. What are you talking about?
You hate the Euros. Which
I don't,
is cool. That's fine. That's
here.
Fine.
No, I hate the ones that were playing our American basketball team over the weekend, but I don't hate the ones that are on the Astros. I like them, you know?
I think the Italian women's volleyball beat the U.S. also.
Really?
Making
Bastards.
A surge.
Yeah.
Blanco. Now, Blanco's another story. Blanco's gone four games without going six innings. He, in his last start, he surpassed his career high for innings pitched in a year. That's the one where, man, it feels, it's tenuous. He's teetering. We gotta pull him back to the light and not fall off into the darkness.
We haven't done a circle of trust in a while. We're not going to do one right now. Maybe we'll do one in the sometime this week. But if we were doing the circle of trust right now, Seth, Arrighetti, Rennell Blanco, are they in?
If I had to make the decision,
if you had to make the decision
two.
On either of them, and if they're both out, who's closer to being in right now, Arrighetti or Rennell Blanco?
This feels like a weird kind of King Solomon trial somehow. I got to go with Arrighetti.
Yeah, Arrighetti right now. Yeah, I think so too. Blanco, you know, Blanco's starting to leak oil a little bit. You know, like it's the wheels are, they're not off, but they're a little wobbly now.
It's not that I don't trust him as... It's weird. I still think of him as like a 24-year-old because he's relatively new to starting.
Yeah.
But I it's a usage thing. If they can manage him fighting through however he's feeling right now, by, you know, they've been spacing his workout a bit, and they can do that more now. I still think there's a good chance he pulls through and fights through whatever he's going through.
It'd be interesting, man. Spencer Arrighetti making it interesting. We haven't mentioned. Man, this is probably the best weekend the Astros have had in a while. They sweep the Red Sox in super convincing fashion. And then Justin Verlander, had a nice solid start at Sugarland on Saturday, through 52 pitches. You know, 52 pitches in three innings is, you know, it's a little high, but only one run, couple of hits, three strikeouts, topped out at nearly 96 miles an hour. Like, that
that's
was
what if, we were looking for.
I would have
we
signed up for that.
For velo, right?
Velo, baby.
We were like, all right,
yep.
Does he have his velo?
And he did.
If he has it, or is he going to have to go the Zach Greinke route and become a junk ball dude late in his career?
How about,
he's still got his speedy.
How about, was it, what was the Red Sox players? It's Scott, Dominic, what's the first baseman, I think, who was pitching in the, I don't know if you stuck around for watching the ninth inning where the Red
Sox. I didn't,
Sox,
I quit.
Yeah.
I had yard work to do. I told Brandy around the seventh. Whenever they're huge, the Red Sox bullpen, once they got to the bullpen.
Yeah.
Once a starter goes out with a strained calf.
Yeah.
And the Red Sox bullpen has been the worst bullpen in the league over the last month. So the Astros just feasted.
It's so bad. No, dude, they put Dominic Smith. They put a position player in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
He was throwing stuff that made Greinke look like Nolan Ryan. Like, he threw, and the funny thing is, Seth, you know, they have the velo on the graphics right there of every pitch. Like, his first pitch, 47 miles per hour.
That's hard to hit if you're not used to it.
He got out of the inning. He got a double.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't give up any runs. He got a little trafficy, but then he got a double play to get out of the inning.
I'm always amazed by how finely tuned Major League Baseball hitters are, that just seeing a bad pitcher sometimes screws them up. It's like our supply chain during COVID. You're like, oh, everything, we've got this immaculate supply chain. Everything is just-in-time manufacturing. You throw a little virus and some masks into the equation. Everybody's like, no toilet paper for
anybody.
Nobody's
getting anything. Yeah.
You go from being the most advanced economy that ever was to like, no, you got to wipe your butt with your bare hands.
Wiping your butt with leaves. Yeah. yeah, dude, he was throwing some junk up there. He was throwing like 48 mile an hour. Just, I don't even know what to call them. They're like just lob pitches out there. And then out of nowhere, he humps it up to 79 miles an hour. And the crowd goes, whoa.
I don't know what was going on with the Yankees yesterday, except that they had a huge lead. They relinquished it. And I'm guessing this is where you got to be thankful for Minute Maid Park.
Yeah.
The Yankees have had a couple doubleheaders in the last few days. They got to some inning. They had a reliever pitch like 50 pitches as he was getting shelled. And I think they probably just, they're bereft of relievers.
Yes.
They just had to leave him out there and sweat it out.
Yeah, man. Yeah. You got to take one. Take one for the team. So good weekend for the Astros. As far as the Texans go, we'll get into headlines. We'll get into stock up, stock down for the Texans at the top of the hour. I would say, Seth, the two biggest, I'll say bubble guys now, right? Like, neither of these guys are, they're far from guaranteed to make the team. I think one's on a bigger bubble than the other. But it wasn't a great night for Damian Pierce or John Mechie on Friday.
Yeah. Damian Pierce, it's, you know, we're stuck back in that old conundrum of, look, the blocking is not ideal out there. Chris Reed, the right guard that was filling in for Tank. Shaq Mason, sorry. I have my fun first names. I mix those up. Hold on. I retract my ding. There.
Damian Pierce,
the tough thing with zone blocking is that sometimes it doesn't look like there's a clear place to go. You go back and watch some of Arian Foster's great runs, and the blocking is good, but he's squeezing through a narrow window. And I think that Damian just doesn't feel this offense the same way a lot of good running backs do in this system. And yet also there were issues with the blocking. So you got a two-headed monster there. I think to get the most out of Damian Pierce, it's going to have to be with Damian Pierce packages. It's going to have to be when you can just run old school man blocking schemes and what have you. But I don't know what your other options are outside of Joe Mixon. Cam Akers has done some really good things. I'm trying to figure out what Cam Akers' Achilles tendons are like. So for those of you who don't know, Cam Akers, the running back that the Texans signed right before camp, he's torn both Achilles tendons. It's a notoriously difficult injury for a running back to come back from one Achilles tendon. And yet he seems both prone to Achilles tendon tears yet incredibly able to come back from them quickly.
Yeah.
So I decided his Achilles tendons are made out of salamander tails. I think that just as a salamander, you can cut off its tail and it'll grow right back. That's what his Achilles tendons are.
They went.
They're very easy to sever, but they grow back quickly.
Salamander tails are to Achilles surgeries what cadaver elbows are to Tommy John surgery. That's what you're telling me, right?
Yeah, he can grow it his own. He's part Wolverine, part Samuel L. Jackson in Unbreakable.
There you go.
Yeah, like it's almost like if Samuel L. Jackson would get injured all the time, but also then heal very quickly.
He, Cam Akers at the practice last night was getting some reps with the C.J. Stroud unit out there. So he's, that's what I've been looking for this camp. I'm like, all right, Cam Akers has shown some things. Jawar Jordan has shown some things. All right, let's see him run with the first group and see what it looks like.
Yeah, you know? I think, too, the other, that same thing's kind of happening with the receivers, where a lot of these guys like Johnny Johnson or Steven Sims or other guys are showing some flashes. And John Metchie is, he's not taking that next step.
No.
And I think they're giving him the benefit of the doubt. And obviously he has huge India. This is where you got to be very sterile in your emotions. It's like, all right, well, yeah, we're all pulling for him, and yet for what he can provide for the team this year, we really haven't seen it outside of some glimpses in the individual periods in 7-on-7.
He was out there. Metchie was out there with Tim Boyle last night practice. So you can. That's how you. I think to me, that's how you can start to maybe decipher where guys are in the pecking order. Is like, what quarterback are they out there with? Because they're doing a lot of mixing and matching.
When John Harris said during the broadcast that Tim Boyle described himself as a gunslinger, I feel like that's a classic. Like, if you've heard it, sometimes you've got a core part of your identity that might be the worst part of your identity, and you don't want to relinquish it.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe if you're at this stage of your career, maybe you let go of that a little bit. Game manager isn't a dirty word when you're making $2 million a year.
Yeah.
Okay? So just, I don't know. I don't know about
gunslinger?
That.
Sean Pendergast described himself as shredded. Like, what?
Huh? I'm one of those guys that can just eat whatever I want. You know what I mean? snorting off your way down the hallway.
Right. Why are you breathing? Why are you breathing so heavy doing radio?
Yeah.
All right. Headlines. We'll dig back into that Steelers game. What the Texans accomplish on the road for a week. News surrounding the Astros and the biggest trade that hasn't happened yet in the NFL. We have more news with that from over the weekend. We'll get into all that in headlines, and we'll do that coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's get into it. Headlines. Texans beat the Steelers in their second preseason game, the Texans' second preseason game. It was the Steelers' first game, and it kind of looked that way in the first half. The Steelers looked like the sloppier and rustier of the two teams. The Texans have been on the road until they got home on Saturday. They've been on the road for about 10 days. D'Amico Ryans said following Friday night's game, they were excited to get home.
We're ready to get back home. We've been on the road long enough, so I know you guys are ready to get back home as well. But we're excited to get back home, see our families.
We'll dig deeper into the stuff from the game on Friday, the performances, who's ascending, who's maybe descending, who's on the bubble. We'll get into that at 7 o'clock. They practiced last night, and I would say, Seth, the Texans did. They had their evening practice last night in front of a full house and a line down the street to get in. Man, those of y'all are the real ones, the ones standing there in 98-degree heat down Merworth and around the corner to get into Texans practice. It is wild to see just the fervor for this team right now. It's really cool to see. Probably the biggest thing last night, Seth, was that Laremy Tunsil was back at practice.
Yeah.
And unlike Joe Mixon, who was back at practice, Laremy was actually out there doing 11-on-11 stuff. Titus did not practice. Blake Fisher, right tackle
with the first team.
So that's I think that's a substantial development. Just like, okay, he is the swing tackle right now.
There's they'd had Broker out there, who's more of a guard than a tackle. He can play both, but Broker, for what you're hoping for, I think probably did as much as you can expect. But Blake Fisher is just a different level of athleticism, and you can see the potential there with Broker, with Fisher. But he still needs seasoning. He still needs to keep working through this. But I think he's improved over the course of the last 3 weeks. It's just a matter of how much. He's not George Fant right now.
No.
Last year, one of the biggest things that happened, I think, without George Fant is your swing tackle. And remember, George Fant looked atrocious during training camp.
He did.
He looked really, really bad.
Yep.
But without George Fant as your swing tackle last year, I don't think the Texans make the playoffs. So that you need Fisher. You've got two injury-prone offensive tackles. You need Fisher to hopefully just keep coming along, keep coming along. They played him longer than they did Kenyon Green in the game the other night. He's getting his reps, and he's doing some good things. He's just got to get rid of some of the little wrinkles that rookies always have.
I think it's safe to say, though. Maybe not safe to say, because you still got two more preseason games left and a lot of practices. But like if week one was tomorrow and Titus Howard couldn't play, Blake Fisher would be your starting right tackle, I would imagine, right now.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And you kind of work through it.
Yeah.
He's going to have some bad snaps. I think Cody Stutes said he looks good versus every pass rusher who's not Danielle Hunter or Will Anderson. You know, so it's it's all now. And the other part of that is the Texans know that if they have him out there versus the very best edge rushers in a game, they're going to give him some extra help. And CJ's going to be well aware of it, too.
Yep.
You manipulate the protections and everything else. I'm not concerned about the pass protection, because with all of their offensive line issues last year, they still actually did a relatively good job protecting the passer through all of those other things. But the run game, I mean, if you want to be a genuinely elite offense, you got to be able to have plays where at any given time there's one defensive lineman. You got to get rid of these plays where one defensive lineman is completely free into the backfield.
Yes.
Kind of a big deal.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Yeah, man. You got Precious Cargo back there playing quarterback, man. You got to protect him.
It's the run game. I'm not worried about C.J. Stroud. I'm worried about the run game.
Because
people say, well, yeah, they're going to face a lot of light boxes. Yeah, they did last year, too, and they couldn't run the ball.
Yeah.
So it just, you've got to be able to capitalize on those loosened up boxes that you see when you've got all this receiving talent out
there. Did you get a chance to watch, like, focus in on Kenyon Green in this game?
Yeah, and I think they did some really good things at times. I do think that the cohesion is coming along, but there's also times where it shows up very poorly. Yeah. So they just got to iron it out. I think you're seeing progress. It's just, we're kind of like I am with Kyle Tucker right now. Like, all right, positive signs are good.
Yeah.
But we're burning daylight here.
You know? For sure. Okay, well, let's get to that. Let's circle over to the Astros. We talked plenty in the previous segment about the sweep of the Red Sox this weekend. The bats woke up on the road, as they tend to do with this team. Kyle Tucker might be getting close to running the bases, so we'll see. Are we still at the stage where we don't believe anything that they're saying about Kyle Tucker, Seth? Is that where we still are?
I'm not. It's not that I don't. This is the problem. I think that the nature of the injury, as you know, Chandler Rome consulted four orthopedic surgeons who all talked about this, is that it's impossible to really project how it doesn't have a standard recovery time.
Yeah.
And it's not uncommon for people to have 4 months of issues with this. Yeah, I just wish. It's like all you ever hear is positive reports out of the Astros. So yeah, I don't really take any of the positive reports as all that positive.
Right. I'll believe it when they give him a rehab assignment in Sugar Land or Corpus Christi. Like that's when it gets real. Now Justin Verlander did have a rehab assignment on Saturday, first of what's going to be probably a couple that he will have there. Pretty good one. Three nice innings for Justin Verlander. Gave up a run, struck out three guys, threw 52 pitches, topped out at 96 on the gun. Here's Justin Verlander on how he felt on Saturday.
Physically, felt good. Was able to kind of step on a few fastballs there at the end. Checked all the boxes I needed to today. Today was just about going out there and being able to compete and have everything physically feel good. So that was a box checked. Tomorrow, same thing. Just make sure I recover well. And I don't anticipate anything weird. The neck thing when it happened, it was an acute thing. I felt it when it happened. It wasn't like a delayed onset type of thing. So, I don't anticipate there being any setbacks or anything tomorrow.
Just so people know, Justin Verlander was not doing that media session in front of a crowd of Astros fans cheering each of his answers, because that's what it sounds like. They were showing.
Oh, yeah, it did work out that way, didn't it?
They were showing highlights from the game. It did, like, he's like, I felt really good afterwards.
It was an acute condition, not a lingering chronic situation.
They were showing him strike guys out at Consolation Field.
It is.
And that was the crowd cheering, yeah.
It's funny with pitchers, or I guess in sports in general, that, acute always sounds worse, except that you hope it's acute. It's something that you get an injury and then you recover from it instead of this ongoing battle.
Yep. So good news with Justin Verlander. Hey, real quick, the NFL, the Brandon Ayuk trade that was all but done to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now the meter seems to be pointed more towards Brandon Ayuk, I guess, staying with San Francisco. They've reopened talks, and the news coming out over the weekend, Seth, was that the trade that would have sent Brandon Ayuk to Cleveland, this would have been a blockbuster. Amari Cooper, a 2 and a 5, second-round pick and a fifth-round pick for Brandon Ayuk, and Brandon Ayuk kiboshed that he didn't want to go to Cleveland.
And it would have been perfect for the 49ers because, you know, when you trade a player this time of year, the trouble is, okay, you get draft picks, but great, what do we do with them? They don't help us this season.
Yep.
They would have gotten a very steady and reliable receiver with lots of experience in a West Coast system that can just that can literally do well on the West Coast.
Yeah. Are you surprised that it's looking like Ayuk back to the Niners? This thing could take five more.
No, I'm not. Nothing surprises me. I tell you what, these so-called newsbreakers who were throwing it out there that it was all but a certainty that he was going to the Steelers, they got to recognize they're going to start. They're messing with gamblers now. There are a lot of people that are laying down futures bets on Brandon Ayuk going to the Steelers. This is like a goal. This is like somebody kicking it into the wrong goal in South America or something. Man. You better watch your back when you're out at the local pub. Yeah. People get angry about this stuff when you start
they
messing
do.
With their paycheck.
I know as well as anybody. They're my people. I know how angry they get.
I'm one of you people now.
No,
I last night I sent you my wager slip of me betting on Kamari Lassiter being defensive rookie of the year. And I was like, so is Lassiter out there? Is Lassiter at practice?
No.
He said no. And I was like, oh!
No, he was not.
Sean, I got $800 I'm depending on coming for my $20 bet at the end of the
40
year.
40-1, huh? 40-1,
yeah.
I'm so proud of you. That's
I feel like I'm looking down the list of all these potential candidates. I feel like Kool-Aid McKinstry is up there just because of his name.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys. And Leatu Leitu is, I think, the leader right now.
Yeah.
He's the pass rusher the Colts drafted. I like Kamara Lassiter's chances.
I do too, man. Stingley's on the other side. Lassiter's going to get plenty of action.
And rookies, that's what happens to rookies. They get tested in those first couple years.
Yeah, man.
The great defensive backs rarely have a boatload of interceptions after their first couple years. They get tested their first couple years, and they feast. And then after that, teams stop testing them.
Yep, take under 3.5 interceptions for Stingley, and thank me later. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, so who got the big performances in this weekend with their stock up? Who was stocked down this weekend as well? Well, do acknowledge me at 7:20. Ooh, man, we've got an acknowledgement from the Luke Combs concert that we've got to get to from a very famous face here in town from over the weekend. We'll do that at 7:20. A reminder, our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at t-mobile.com/switch.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.